today, where's that recession then? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, world's latest post covering finance and property news. Well, this is our weekly market review. So, as we move into July, the past 6 months on the markets have contained all types of contradictions, with price spiked by AI, hopes the Fed will cut rates when they lifted, and a more robust US economy than many had expected, perhaps even promising higher returns ahead. In fact, on Friday, the S&P 500 rose 1.3%, the Dow Jones Industrial Average added 0.9%, and the Nasdaq rose 1.5% as markets prepared for the June 30 endpoint. The US economy has proved resilient in the face of the Federal Reserve's aggressive monetary policy tightening, so far avoiding a recession that many forecasters had been predicting at the start of 2023. In fact, they kept pushing it out and out. While a recession is now seen as a less likely scenario this year, economic concerns have not actually disappeared. A recession probability model run by the New York Federal Reserve based on the Treasury yield curve earlier this month projected a 71% chance of one in the next 12 months. The prospect of a soft landing, at least in investors' minds, has gone from improbable earlier in the year to now quite possible, analysts at UBS wrote. Of course, this positive market scenario can evaporate quickly if inflation and jobs data disappoints. Some analysts also worry that estimates of corporate earnings, which are expected to rise 1.4% in 2023 for the S&P 500 companies, will need to be adjusted sharply lower if a downturn arrives. Anyway, the S&P 500 defied recession fears and a US banking crisis to notch a 15.9% gain in the first half. The Nasdaq Composite powered ahead 31.7% for its biggest first half increase in four decades. We've had a pretty resilient market in the first half of this year, said Mona Mahajan, senior investment strategist Edward Jones. The market needs one big question answered though, and that is, what does the economy look like in the back half of the year? And let's be clear, it's the Magnificent Seven which has carried this market. So results from seven tech companies and other mega-cap companies, including Apple, Microsoft and Nvidia, whose outsized gains have driven the S&P 500 to rise this year, will be absolutely critical. While the S&P 500 has gained 15.9%, the equal-weighted version of the index, which is a proxy for the average stock, only gained about 6%. And the spread between the two indices is around levels last seen during the dot-com bubble, analysts at HSBC noted in a recent report. A concentration of equity returns from the largest companies is very unlikely to continue indefinitely, the bank analyst wrote. We got the latest batch of US inflation data as well, which showed signs of progress. The personal consumption expenditures prices, that's the inflation metric most closely watched by the Federal Reserve, rose just a tepid 0.1% in May, in line with expectations, and down from 0.4% in April. Core PCE, which subtracts volatile food and energy, also matched consensus views at 0.3%, down from 0.4% in April. And so that means on an annual basis, the PCE slipped to 3.8% from April's 4.3%, and core PCE was 4.6% in May, down from 4.7% in April, but of course well above the Fed's 2% goal. So progress remains slow. The core number remains above where the Fed probably wants to see it, and explains recent Fed speak around higher rates for longer. Prior to the PCE data, gross domestic product data on Thursday showed more resilience than thought in the economy, a development that could put more winds behind the Fed's rate hike sails. US GDP grew by an analyzed 2% in the first quarter of this year, according to the Commerce Department. That will add to the Federal Reserve's relief that its rate hikes have not weighed too much on growth. Economists had forecast a year-on-year growth of just 1.4% on the average for the January-March period, and the Commerce Department's prior growth estimate for the quarter was just 1.3%. Now, a panel discussion on Wednesday, hosted by the European Central Bank and included the head of the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England and the Bank of Japan, showed nearly all on board with higher interest rates to curb higher than expected inflation. Fed Chair Jerome Powell followed that up on Thursday by telling a banking event in Madrid that the US Central Bank was trying to find the level of rates that would restrain economic activity and inflation without causing unnecessary weakness. Ah, that narrow path. Ahead, the Consumer Price Index report will arrive on July the 12th. That'll be a crucial read on inflation before the Fed's July 26th policy decision. And the US Central Bank has held rates steady in June, but has signalled two more increases are coming this year, including one widely expected now in July. Should the US Central Bank in fact follow through with a quarter percentage point rate hike, that would put the benchmark Fed funds target in the range of 5.25 to 5.5%. That would be the highest since January 2001. The slower pace of inflation may not be enough to stop the Fed hiking in July, Pantheon Macroeconomics said, if next month's inflation data and monthly jobs report comes in hot. The banking sector crisis resulting from Silicon Valley Bank's failure in March did not end up bringing the systemic event many had feared. Yet investors remain on the lookout for other financial system vulnerabilities that are being exacerbated by the Fed's most aggressive rate hiking cycle in decades. One such area is commercial real estate, with concerns stemming from lingering office space vacancies from the pandemic, although the recent stress tests published by the Fed did look a little more healthy than many expected. Rising rates have boosted yields on fixed income assets and cash to their highest levels in decades, finally giving investors an alternative to equities. That does not appear to have hobbled stock returns so far this year, but it may dull the allure of equities going forward if rates stay elevated. The equity risk premium, which measures the S&P 500's earnings yield against the yield on the 10-year Treasury note, puts stocks at around their least attractive levels in over a decade, according to Truist Advisory Services. And the S&P 500 rallied on Friday as data showed inflation cooled more than expected and triggered bullish bets on stocks, keeping the broader market on track to deliver their best first half performance since 2021. While stocks have so far taken policymakers' projections of higher rates in their stride, that could change if bond yields continue to rise, though. Benchmark yields recently hit three-month highs, with a 10-year US Treasury yield at around 3.8%, well over double where it stood at the end of 2021. Rising yields generally dull the allure of stocks compared to bonds, but in recent months, equity valuations have still climbed. Some doubt the rally's staying power, of course. A Deutsche Bank survey found that more than three quarters of investors believe the next 10% move in the S&P 500 will be down compared to 24% who projected that in March. Those doubts could stem from concerns about economic fallout from rate hikes. An analyst at UBS Global Wealth Management said in a recent note, the likelihood of a recession hinges most on monetary policy becoming more restrictive, an eventuality stocks have not priced for yet. With stocks already priced for a near perfection of a soft landing, we see better risk reward in high quality bonds over equities, the UBS analysts wrote. Despite that, volumes of course were light towards the end of the day, and the markets will open only partially on Monday, ahead of Tuesday's Independence Day holiday, so anyone trading on Monday should be prepared for potential sharper moves than usual amid possible sparse volumes. And ahead, US equities must navigate employment data and an earnings season that could be precarious, with the Federal Reserve bent on raising US interest rates. Investors betting the upward trend will continue over the next few weeks have recent history on their side, because the S&P 500 has posted a positive return in eight consecutive Julys, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ 100 has climbed in July for 15 straight years. Several indicators show growing optimism about equities. In fact, positive sentiment in the American Association of Individual Investors surveys have come in above its historical average for four straight weeks, while positioning measures tracked by banks have shown investors recently increased their exposure to stocks. The pretty useless CBOE Volatility Index, which measures investor demand for protection against stock swings, recently hit its lowest level since early 2020. But as I've explained before, This is an out-of-date index and is not that meaningful. More importantly, July brings its share of potential market-moving events. First up is next Friday's US employment report, which will give investors a snapshot of how the economy is faring after the 500 basis points of rate hikes from the Fed since last year, its most aggressive tightening in decades. Signs of continued solid job growth could reinforce a view that has helped boost markets this year that the US economy can avoid a severe recession despite the Fed's tightening. The labour market is probably going to end up proving to be the big catalyst for what may happen market-wise and also monetary policy-wise, said Omar Aglaia, and Chief Investment Officer at Schwab Asset Management. Second quarter corporate results will kick off the following week. S&P 500 companies are expected to post an overall drop in earnings of 5.7% from the year earlier period. Now, gold has crossed the half-year mark with a gain of about 5% in both futures trading as well as on the spot price of bullion, but the yellow metals holding on the $1,900 support level is fraying amid fears of more rate hikes by the Federal Reserve. The front month August gold contract on New York's COMEX settled at $1,927 an ounce. That's up 0.52% on the day. The big picture is inflation is slowing, but it's still too high for the Fed, Market Watch said in a commentary published soon after the PCE report was put out by the Commerce Department. Senior Fed officials worry that rising labor costs and price increases in major parts of the economy, such as housing, could keep inflation at elevated levels for a few more years. Oil markets rose by more than 1% on Friday, as softer US inflation data suggests the Federal Reserve could be a little restrained in its hawkish talk to rein in price growth via rate hikes. But while crude futures were also higher for the week and month, they're on course to end the half down as much as 14% amid fears of a global recession, triggered by signs that most major central banks will raise rates in the near term. New York traded West Texas Intermediate settled up 0.84% at $7.45 a barrel, and the US crude benchmark was up 2.1% for the week and 3.7% for the month, but for the quarter it was down about 6.6%, while for the year it's lost about 14%. London traded Brent crude settled up 0.91% at $75.19 a barrel. The global crude benchmark showed a gain of 1.5% for the week and 3.8% for the month. For the quarter, it slid 6.1%, while for the year, it showed a deficit of 12.8%. The first half of the oil story shows disappointed oil bulls with concerns about rising interest rates, Federal Reserve officials promising a slowdown in the economy, bank failures, perceived weakness in Chinese oil demand, and the inability to rein in sanctioned oil from Russia and Iran, said Phil Flynn, energy analyst at Price Futures Group in Chicago. But Flynn, also an ardent oil bull, said the second half could be a different story and positive for those long crude, as the current supply surplus in the market may turn to a deep deficit. The bull thesis for oil in the second half is held up by expectations that major producer Saudi Arabia will cut production meaningfully to bring Brent to above $80 and WTI to at least $75. Aside from global monetary tightening, traditional sources of demand for energy, especially from China, the number one import of oil, hasn't been as encouraging as thought in the first 6 months of the year. The crude demand outlook has too much doom and gloom priced in, as the US and China outlooks should remain upbeat. China might be buying cheaper discounted Russian crude, but soon they will require more, and those purchases could broaden as they slowly deliver more economic stimulus. The key for oil will be if the Saudis remain aggressive in getting this market tighter with an extension or slightly deeper output cuts, he said. Now, over in Europe, the so-called window dressing led the DAX back above the 16,000 point level, and it's turned 16% for the first half. And of course, we'll know on Monday how sustainable this last swing is. The fundamental environment for equity does remain difficult, though, and that was also the case in the first half of the year, and it did not disturb the market. However, the further rise in interest rates is making alternative investments with less risk more and more attractive, so that only a small impulse could be enough to trigger large capital flows into the bond or money markets. Consumer sentiment in Germany continues to be characterized by increasing uncertainty. Contrary to expectations, the GfK Consumer Climate Index fell to minus 25.4 points in June. In times of rising prices, people are keeping the money together. The propensity to save is increasing. And the counteracting decline in the propensity to consume will at some point also be reflected in companies. It is thus the perfect breeding ground for a longer and deeper recession. With inflation and interest rates, this trio of issues is then complete, which is likely to occupy the stock market in the coming 6 months as well. In Sintra, Portugal, at the annual meeting of the ECB Central Bank, the two most important participants, Lagarde and Powell, once again made it clear that the fight against inflation is far from over. Performance in London was less impressive thanks to higher inflation and more rate hikes in the wind. The FTSE closed at 7,531, up 0.8%, while the CAC in France was at 7,400. Most Asian stocks moved in a flat to low range on Friday as weak Chinese economic data and growing fears of US interest rate hikes dented sentiment, though Chinese stocks benefited from some bargain buying and stimulus expectations. China's Shanghai Composite rose 0.62%, having hit multi-month lows earlier in June, attracting some bargain buying. Gains in China spilled over into Hong Kong's Hang Seng, which slid just a bit. Data on Friday showed that China's manufacturing sector slowed for a third straight month in June, while growth in non-manufacturing activity eased more than expected. The readings pointed to more economic pain for the country as Beijing struggles to shore up a slowing post-COVID economic rebound. But the weak data also brought up the possibility of more stimulus measures from the government, which could increase local liquidity and support Chinese stock markets. Concerns over China weighed on other markets exposed to the country. The Taiwan weighted index shed 0.7%, while Japanese stocks tumbled as inflation remained sticky. Japan's Nikkei 225 index fell 0.14%, while the TOPIX also fell as data on Friday showed that inflation in Tokyo rose slightly less than expected in June, but remains well above the Bank of Japan's target range. The reading points to continued pressure on the Bank of Japan to eventually tighten policy this year, which could in turn dampen the low interest rate appeal of Japanese stocks. Traders also locked in some profits in Japanese markets after both the TOPIX and the Nikkei surged to 33-year highs through to June. Other Asian markets kept the tight range, with South Korea's Kospi adding 0.56%. The Australian share market rose 0.1% on Friday and gave a return of 9.7% for the financial year. The benchmark ASX 200 was at 7,203 at market's close, with 8 out of the 11 industry sectors recording gains. The All Ordinaries edged up to 7,403. The technology sector was the best performer, up 0.8%. WiseTech shares rose 0.6% to $71.81. Xero added 1.4 cents to $118.93. And Life360 shares jumped 3.8% to $7.60. Energy stocks also recorded gains, with Yancoal rallying 1.8% to $4.58 a share. Santos rose 0.8% to $7.52. And Viva Energy added 1% to $3.01. The major miners were in the green. It comes as iron ore futures traded down a little on the Singapore Exchange, down 1.7% to $110.88 a ton during the late afternoon trading session. BHP Group shares rose 0.1% to $44.99, and Fortescue Metals added 0.3% to $21.18. Other miners also recorded gains. Lithium producer Pilbara Minerals rallied 1.2% to $4.89, and IGO rose 1.2% to $15.20. Consumer staples were the worst performers, down 0.3%. Winemaker Treasury Wine Estates dropped 1.4% to $11.23 a share. Metcash shares slid 1.6% to $3.76. Elders declined 1.2% to $6.58. And Woolworths slipped 0.3% to $39.73. Link Administration Holdings shares tumbled 13.9% to $1.67 a share after the company announced that its contract with Hester would not be renewed. Industry Superfund Hester makes up about 4% of Link's revenue for the financial year 2023, and Link said Hester had plans to transition out by the second quarter of financial year 25. Bubs shares were flat at 18 cents after it reported its revenues in China for the year were expected to be at the lower end of forecasts of $13.5 million to $13.8 million compared to the previous year's result. And Downer EDI shares rallied 4.3% to $4.11 after revealing that it sealed a $4.6 billion contract to manufacture trains for the Queensland government. Now ahead, investors are beginning the new financial year on an unsteady footing after sealing that 9.7% annual return, amid broader worries that valuations are yet to reflect an economic slowdown from the most aggressive monetary policy cycle in generation. That reverses almost all of the 10.2% drop for the 21-22 financial year after the war in Ukraine and the battle to defeat inflation pushed the local share market to a loss for only the third time this decade. In 2020-21, the benchmark jumped 24%, with profit season 4 weeks away, and the benchmark ASX 200 index adding $276 billion in market capitalization to a record $2.4 trillion. There's a lot in play. Since the lows in October, equities have rallied around the world, pushing the S&P 500 up more than the 20% into a bull market, and the ASX 200 up 11.6%. As investors put aside concerns of slowing global growth from hawkish central banks looking to tame inflation and the very real risk of a recession. The 4 percentage points of cash rate increases from the RBA over the past 30 months of 4.1% was not enough to derail the equities rally that caught many in the market by surprise. The most watched part of the curve between the Australian 2 and 10-year government bond yields does remain inverted, long considered to be a recession signal. Over the last 6 months, I have sensed a considerable amount of frustration from investors as this economic cycle is not playing out faster, said Richard Schellbach, equity strategist from UBS. Many investors still feel that an economic recession is basically inevitable and would just like to get the overall experience over and done with. They would like to see equity prices and earnings come down hard so they can feel comfortably that the worst is now behind and can therefore rotate their portfolios back into cyclical stocks so as to profit from the recovery trade. The strategy has also noted that while there had been periods over the past two decades of economic pain and collapses in the share market, including in 2000 during the dot-com bubble, the global financial crisis in 2008 and the COVID-19 in 2020 were all short, sharp and sudden. This time, he said, might be different, and he warned of a slow bleed that could be starting to play out that was more akin to the early 1990s, when an old-fashioned economic recession driven by central bank monetary tightening played out through the share market. Morningstar head of equity research Peter Warne said economic activity was starting to come under pressure, and the cash rate of 4.1% amid depleted savings built up through the pandemic and the so-called mortgage cliff had yet to roll over in a meaningful way. Household incomes have been protected from these interest rate rises, but that is about to end abruptly, Mr. Warne said. That protection will not be there going forward. You would have to say per capita household consumption is going to go into a recession. And he added that it was all but inevitable that corporate earnings would come under pressure, which could be reflected in the June half results. That's consistent with the consensus earnings per share estimates for the 24 financial year, which would imply a drop of 2.9% across the ASX 200 companies in aggregate and compares to growth of 3.6% in 2023. I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I'm trying to be realistic, Mr. Warne said. I don't think you're going to see our market well north of 7,500, but you could see it back towards 7,000 at some stage, then you might see some green shoots as we move into 2024. While all 11 of the ASX 200 sectors finished in the green in the 2023 financial year, it was the tech sector that performed, jumping 37% over the past 12 months, 14.5% of which happened in the past 6 weeks as investors jumped on the artificial intelligence bandwagon after US chipmaker Nvidia's sales forecast smashed market expectations. Very few local tech companies, and you can count them on one hand, have performed that well, but they have got suckered up in the AI-led Nasdaq rally, Morningstar's Mr. Warne said. Banks and material stocks, which accounted for about 50% of the ASX 200, have traded sideways. They haven't gone ballistic, he added. The financial sector finished the year up 7.8% and materials were up 14.9%. BHP, which accounts for about 11% of the ASX, rose 9.1%. Nathan Parkin, fund manager at Ethical Partners' $2 billion Australian share fund, said he expected to see more sideways trading for the share market over the next 12 months. He's allocated almost a third of the fund to small caps and is underweight materials and the big banks, given the macro environment and the level of company debt. Instead, he prefers non-bank financials, money managers, and the healthcare sector, betting on the continued recovery from the pandemic. Investors came into the year with a very low level of confidence and people expecting a wide-ranging recession across all company earnings, he said. The market has since rallied into varying degrees of worry. Generally, share prices have held up because earnings have held up and the wide-ranging recession would have taken hold hasn't occurred yet. Even so, he noted that the sectors that investors ascribe a recession to had narrowed from a broad downturn to focus more on consumer discretionary companies and real estate trusts, which was starting to be reflected in the share prices. There is still a decent amount of reluctance to this rally, Mr. Parkin added. And Hassan Tefik, senior analyst at MST Marquee, said confirmation of a peak in Australian inflation would be a prelude to the end of rising interest rates and could set the market up for another big leg higher. He said he's starting to position his model portfolio for the end of the tightening cycle. The firm has made its first foray into high-quality retailers and will look to add builders, materials and banks. As long as inflation continues to come down and as long as central banks respond to falling inflation the same way by ending their tightening cycle, then you would have to say that the line of least resistance for the share market is rather up than down, he said. And finally, cryptocurrency-related stocks including Coinbase, Global, Riot Platforms and Marathon Digital were mostly higher on Friday after moving off session lows, even as the US Securities and Exchange Commission said that the recent slew of Bitcoin exchange-traded fund filings that have triggered a rally in cryptos were inadequate. BlackRock, Invesco, and Fidelity are among the biggest names that have applied for a spot Bitcoin ETF. The Wall Street Journal states that the SEC told the exchanges that it returned the filings because they didn't name the spot Bitcoin exchange with which they're expected to have a surveillance sharing agreement or provide enough information about the details of those surveillance arrangements. Asset managers can update the language and refile, it added. This could even be interpreted that the SEC are indicating to BlackRock what they need to do to get this across the line and approved, which is also positive, financial commentator Ted Talks Macro argued in a more optimistic take on the news. Bitcoin nonetheless traded down over 1.16% to 30,456 US at last take. So the question is, has the recession gone away or is it just postponed? And I don't think I can make a prediction on that. All leading indicators, to my mind, are still signaling recession ahead. Slowing consumer, higher interest rates, falling earnings, and of course, significant risks around the place. But markets have proved to just put all that to one side and to go all in on AI and to talk themselves into a higher state. But I take what the central bank leaders said in Portugal this last week at face value. Rates will be higher, quite a lot higher, and for a lot longer. And this ultimately, I think, will turn over the economies and turn over markets. And of course, as I said earlier on, there are other alternatives out there now to stocks, and things like bonds and even savings are looking much more attractive. So just maybe, the second half we'll see a downturn as the recession vibes increase. Who knows? I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.